Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Women's right to vote under the 19th Amendment to the U.S. Constitution was ratified in August of 1920, so next year is the centennial anniversary. California, though, ratified the amendment on November 1st, 1919, so the 100th anniversary is already being celebrated. The State Archives just released a digital exhibit titled On the Road to Ratification, California and the Struggle for Women's Suffrage. It's a terrific exhibit, and we posted a link to it. It features news articles, pictures, campaign literature. It's really great for any kind of a school report at any level. And it isn't just about California. The piece traces the long fight across the country for women's right to vote. In the studio with me is Professor Teresa Bergman, chair of the Communication Department at University of the Pacific in Stockton. She has researched and written a book titled The Commemoration of Women in the United States, Remembering Women in Public Space. Hi, it's good to have you back with us, Professor.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
There's a parallel here between that right to vote journey and the commemoration of women. Would you make the link?
In 1920, women finally got the right to vote nationally. And that's a long time not to be able to vote in the United States. So following that, and women being officially able to enter the public sphere, took quite a while to begin to recognize women's contributions and lots of commemoration, particularly memorials on the National Mall and at the federal level. These large sites have been to politicians and to war heroes. And for women to start to be able to take these kinds of public roles and to receive that kind of recognition, it took a while to move along and for commemoration on a federal level with federal funding to be able to get into full swing.
You spent a lot of time in archives and, in fact, national parks yourself working on this. Why national parks and what were you searching for?
Well, this is one of the main places where we have a lot of commemoration takes place is in national parks and the National Park Service. And what I was particularly interested in researching this book and pulling this book together was how we as a country were remembering and commemorating women's contributions to the country itself as patriots and what our contributions were. Because previously, much of women's work had been behind the scenes, not in the public sphere, in organizing movements, in temperance, in abolition. And this level of organizing really wasn't recognized the way the leaders were, the way the elected officials were. So that when you go to a public space, a lot of these spaces are administered by the National Park Service that is very involved in commemoration and putting together sites where U.S. history is communicated.
By commemoration, for the most part, we're talking about statues, public statues, or something touchable in a public place.
Right, something you can walk into, something you can go visit on the National Mall, the Lincoln Memorial, the Vietnam Women's Memorial, the Women in Military Service in Arlington, National Cemetery.
Let me use, to give an example of what you were just talking about, the statue of Eleanor Roosevelt. And your chapter is titled Eleanor Roosevelt as Coda. And the point you make is that her service contributions were prolific and comprised a variety of progressive causes, and yet her likeness is safely, and here in quotes, relegated to a position in FDR's shadow. So the kind of diminutive nature that her role was treated is something that you want us to pay attention to and you think needs dramatic changing in terms of history.
And that was a really interesting chapter, and I wasn't even going to add to do any research and have a chapter on Eleanor Roosevelt's statue until I was researching with the on the history of how much commemoration to women there was in the National Corridor, and it turned out that there was only 6% of all of the statues, all of the memorials in D.C. were to women, and that included Eleanor Roosevelt. Mm. So I thought that would be an interesting place to start, and how did that come about? Because the FDR Commission put together to commemorate FDR started in 1955. And they didn't even start working on the memorial until the 1990s. And the first mention of Eleanor being added to that memorial was in 1990. And she
wow.
wasn't even part of any of the plans, any of the iterations through all of the years. And finally, when Bruce Halprin was chosen as the architect, the landscape architect, he brought her and considered and suggested that she should be included in the memorial as well.
I'm going to jump to another commemorative statue, and this is the Vietnam Women's Memorial in the National Mall. And so let's just talk about women's patriotism and how that is being honored or commemorated.
One of the really interesting things about the Vietnam Women's Memorial and the Women in Military Service for America Memorial that's right across the way in Arlington Cemetery is these were ways we were commemorating women in the military. And these are military memorials. And both of them, I see them as sort of bookends for a way that we're looking at and the way we're thinking about and recognizing women's contributions to the military. Because until 2015, women couldn't serve in combat. And not being able to serve in combat really limited women's ability to move up through the military rank and enjoy all the benefits men have from military service. So what we have with the Vietnam Vets, the Vietnam Women's Memorial, is sort of an end of an era because it's nurses. It's three nurses, and they're metaphorical women. They aren't actual women.
Mm.
And then what we have in across the way at the Arlington is actual women who and the entire history of women's work and contributions, paid and unpaid, through the military all the way through active combat. So it's they're very different experiences, very different representations, very different messages about what it means to be a woman who is part of the military.
You're listening to Professor Teresa Bergman from University of the Pacific. We're talking about her book titled The Commemoration of Women in the United States. It's an academic book, but it's also available to the public. And in fact, she's been busy with speaking engagements. Do women need new forms of commemoration now because of being absent in history? And what would that look like in your vision or imagination?
That's a really good question, and it's one that I certainly grappled with a lot when writing and looking at all of these places together. And in many ways, yes, we do need new forms of commemoration. And it's for women, it's for people of color, it's for all the groups that have been traditionally left out of commemoration. And that's one of the things that I saw. If there was anything that connected these sites that I looked at, it was that when you're trying to commemorate people who have been legally as well as socially kept from the public sphere, the way you start to recognize their contributions has to also be different because what they have been able to contribute in terms of their communities, their cities, the regions, the nation has been a different kind of contribution. So we need to think about ways to commemorate looking at that level of contribution to our nation.
In the conclusion, you write, during the writing of this book, the controversy surrounding the removal of Confederate statues and monuments erupted. And you go on to say, this controversy highlights the changing ideas of appropriate behavior and its place in commemoration. So there's a parallel there in the conversation you're having about women. But who else is writing or focusing attention right now, Professor, on the commemoration of women? There's a lot being done around the Confederate controversy, but as it pertains specifically to women?
Well, that's another really interesting point, because I think one of the things we need to think about once we start bringing in less underrepresented groups, we have all kinds of intersections. And it's women of color, and it's women from lower income groups and from different parts of the country, as well as men in similar positions. And the ways we have all kinds of really interesting new directions coming up in commemoration that's looking at all these intersections across the country. And that is very encouraging.
At the timing of this 100th anniversary approaching. So again, I go back to where this conversation might go and what do you see in the crossover between the anniversary of the amendment, the right to vote, the commemoration of women, and the awareness that we're all coming to in how we honor people?
I think the main thing that we're coming to see is that women are involved in everything. And it's not just women's issues. I went to Montgomery recently to look at the Peace and Justice Memorial, also known as the Lynching Memorial. Women are very involved in every aspect of that memorial and who were lynched as well. I recently went to the coal mines in eastern Pennsylvania, the anthracite coal region, and women were very involved in all kinds of support levels for their husbands and sons that worked, and the kind of commemoration that's happening for their work in the community and keeping their families healthy and able to participate. And so what I'm seeing across the country, the Tenement Museum in New York, is the role of women is thoroughly included now, as opposed to let's just look at the men's participation. We see emphasis on both across the board as we look at not just necessarily the celebratory moments in our history, but also the parts of our history that got us to where we are today that might not necessarily be our most glowing moments, but they are part of our history, and women were present in every single instance.
Because we're in Northern California, I need to mention the commemoration in Richmond, California. And would you say something briefly about it? Because it's an easy field trip for a lot of people in this region.
Oh, yeah. It's a great site, the Rosie the Riveter Memorial, and in Richmond, California, that opened in 2000, dedicated in 2000, and it's just an amazing site. And the National Park Service expanded it, bought three more of the Kaiser shipyards, and have made this. There's a walking tour and an auto tour that looks at the home front industries during World War II and the Rosies that participated, as well as all the people, the working class people that participated in the home front work during World War II, and it's just an amazing site. They've done a great job.
I don't know what got you started on this. What was your aha moment?
I think my aha moment was realizing that democracy is not carved in stone, that the ways that we learn about what our history is, what's important, has to change. Because we change, and because the way that we commemorate, the way that we go to these sites, when I went to the Lincoln Memorial, when I went to Mount Rushmore, changes. And it's so important, if not vital, to embrace that change and to change our commemoration to represent who we are. Because when we were founded, we couldn't vote. Blacks were three-fifths of a person, and it takes so much effort to really be an active and vibrant democracy and really represent everything about what it means to have one person, one vote in every aspect. And every aspect includes commemoration. And I think that combination of being a historical tourist set me off. And it's like, no. I want to hear these other stories, too.
One last question. What's the ongoing challenge in adding women to the landscape of commemoration?
I think one of the things is to remember that there's no one kind of woman, that we're just like everybody else. It depends on everything about us, intersectional in terms of our race, our religion, our location, our age, our history. Everything matters, so that all of that needs to be brought in when you bring women. So it's just not add woman and stir. That is actually a very thoughtful, and it looks at particularly the place that they came out of and what enabled their participation, because everyone's participation comes about for a whole different set of reasons.
Thank you so much. As I said, I think it's an ideal topic for a student exploration, for anything new. Thanks for bringing it to us.
Thank you.
That is Professor Teresa Bergman, professor and chair of the Department of Communication at University of the Pacific. We posted a link with more about her book, also a link to the State Archives digital exhibit. You're listening to Insight on Cap Radio.
This is Cap Radio 90.9 Sacramento, streaming at capradio.org. We got support from All Foreign and Domestic Body Shop in Stockton for more than 30 years. Authorized collision specialists for 14 manufacturers such as Tesla, Mercedes-Benz, and Jaguar. Collision repair for all makes and models. AFDbodyshop.com.
Thanks so much for listening to Insight today on Cap Radio here on the final day of our on-air fundraiser for 2019. We're asking you to get involved right now with a contribution to this radio station by calling us up or making it online at capradio.org. My name is Nick Bruner. I'm here to help you pay for another year of Insight along with Sally Schilling. Sally is our podcast director. We're asking you to become members of Cap Radio right now.
Cap Radio is your constant radio companion, your source of some of the greatest music ever composed, an important advocate for classical music in our community, and so many other things. But it's your role that we're focusing on right now. As we get to the end of this fund drive, you make it all possible with your contribution. Please give right now.
There are hundreds of organizations around the world that cover international news, right? So what keeps you coming back to Cap Radio? What keeps you coming back to NPR? Maybe it's comprehensive reports. Maybe it's Insight's way of connecting you with community events and what's going on here locally in the Central Valley and through Western Nevada. We are dedicated to, as thoroughly as possible, reporting right here at Cap Radio. And your financial support is the bottom line. Your financial support, your membership right now is what makes it all possible well into and beyond 2020. So I'm asking you right now to make a contribution of support. Consider $13 a month right now and call 1-800-800-5867. That's 1-800-800-5867. Or make your $13 monthly contribution at our website, capradio.org.
This is the last day to really stretch your generosity even further with that food bank option with your donation to Cap Radio. That's a portion of your gift that will be given to a food bank in the area. It's determined by your zip code, so you're going to be helping your neighborhood food bank along with Cap Radio. The more you give, the more meals we can help provide when you donate now at capradio.org or pick up the phone, 1-800-800-5867. That's 1-800-800-5867.
Join Austin from Auburn, David in Sacramento, Nicole in Sacramento as well, who writes, thank you for all you do. Sandra in Pleasanton, who enjoys the classical music that we have on our classical service. All of these are individual contributions that have been coming in to help keep us on track to end this drive today. Whether it's holiday shopping or donations to nonprofits, maybe you find yourself giving an awful lot right now. I just want to say thank you so much for every contribution that comes into Cap Radio. Thank you for considering us. Right now, make your donation and cross Cap Radio off your gift list. I promise we've been good. We've earned it. Been doing it all year. Call us up at 1-800-800-5867 or donate at capradio.org.
You might think, oh, I don't know how much of a difference this is going to make if I, you know, start my monthly contribution of $10, $13. It's a huge source for us that really does keep this station going. We really depend on your contribution. And it's listeners like you that have helped launch Cap Radio and kept it going for 40 years. And when you donate, you'll get a new Cap Radio sticker as a thank you, and you'll qualify for all these other really cool welcome gifts. So donate now, capradio.org, or call the number. You know it, 1-800-800-5867. That's 1-800-800-5867 or capradio.org. Thank you so much.